Hello, everyone, and welcome to a sequester podcast hosted by me, Taryn Armstrong, and with me, Brent Walgemont. How you doing, Brent?
I thought you were going to say the sequester bot is the host of this podcast, and that would have been fun. But no, it's Taryn and Brent together again. Yeah, we're doing a sequester podcast. What are we doing, Taryn? We're going to tell people why we love sequester so much. I'm going to tell people why I love sequester so much. And we're going to tell people what the hell sequester is.
Yes, sequester is a show that I think a lot of people, if you're a fan of Big Brother, you're a fan of Survivor, then this is probably a show that you might be interested in, and you probably know a little bit about it. You probably heard about it. It certainly spawned from a player of Big Brother.
Yes, it spawned from Audrey Middleton, who was on Big Brother 17. Obviously, if you remember anything about Audrey Middleton on Big Brother 17, the number one thing that comes to your mind is the blanket. But number two, the other thing that comes to your mind is how big of a game she played early on. She was gaming hardcore from the minute she walked in that house. Too big of a game for Big Brother that lasts 99 days or even 100 days sometimes. But it was a fun game to watch nonetheless. And she developed this game called Sequester. And for those of you out there who say, well, what is Sequester? Isn't that online game that Audrey Middleton yes, you're right. That's what it used to be. But it is not that anymore, Taryn. I remember a couple years ago, back when Alice was with us, and it was Big Brother 18, and Tiffany Russo, who was sister of Vanessa Russo, was on Big Brother, and Alex was talking about how he watched Sequester, and this Tiffany Russo chick, she was on the second season of the online version of Sequester, and she just ran it from top to bottom. And I was like, so I was intrigued, and I checked it out, but I found that it was really hard to watch, because it was this online game, and these people went into rooms, and you had to be there at the exact time that it went live. And if you didn't, there wasn't a taped version available. Basically, it wasn't digestible for a mass audience. And I feel like that's what Audrey Middleton realized after she'd done 10 seasons of online Sequester, that she wanted to try to branch out and try to see if this show and this concept was navigatable and something that you could partake of in a live atmosphere. And I feel like that after one season that was basically a pilot project, that was the first season of the live version of Sequester. And she will, by the way, for those people who think I'm shading it, I'm not. That's what she herself would say. She and her boyfriend, Drew, who also is part of the production crew of the show. The first season was like a pilot project of Sequester Live. It was called the Black Hat season, where they put 20 some odd people in a house and they let them play. And they, I think it was just Audrey and her boyfriend doing the cameras, and they really didn't know what they were doing. But they learned a lot. And I really feel like by the second season of Sequester, they really hit their stride. And I was amazed at what I saw. And but you said at the beginning of this of the show that anybody who loves Survivor and Big Brother, you're going to love Sequester. I mean, honey, I feel like watching this, this is the Big Brother I wish I got to see on a daily basis. The way these people game, and as much as they think about strategy and how hard they're playing for what is probably 100th of the money that's available on Big Brother, it is astounding, Taryn. And I'm so excited to talk about it.
Yes, actually, if you are a listener of The Taryn Show, Audrey was the fourth ever guest on The Taryn Show, and that was over 2 years ago now, and she talked about how she wanted to start a live edition of Sequester. She talked about different ideas that she had at the time, but it sounded very exciting, and so I'm very pleased that she has got this off the ground, and that it is as impressive as it is. You are right, I think, in the sense that there are areas I think that she does better than Big Brother production. Casting is probably the main thing.
Yeah.
And that's something that's not super hard to surpass Big Brother with. But I think it's at least on par with what Survivor has been doing in terms of getting people there that are there to game, that are interesting characters. Nobody there is a dud that you're just like, oh, this person can just leave. Even the people that are like overly emotional and don't want to play too hard still have like something compelling about them. And there are not many of those people there either. So there's is really the casting, I think, is the main thing to be applauded for Sequester.
That's the number one thing that I wanted to talk about with this show. It is a diverse cast that they had for season two. And of course, the season, I'm so excited I came and talked. The season that's coming up, season three, diverse cast, interesting cast, young, old, different walks of life. But they all share one thing in common, and that is that they are 20 nutcase gamers like you and me that live and breathe reality television. Just to put it all out there for you guys, they just taped the third season down in Atlanta about a month ago. I got to go down and talk with them ahead of time. We'll talk about that in a bit. But the main thing you need to understand is they paid for their own way to get there. There are people flying as far away as like Calgary, Canada, to come play this game. And they paid for their own plane tickets to go there and play for what is a period of 5 days and 20 people. It is really phenomenal to watch these people be so hungry, just like I feel like I would be if I ever got the chance to play one of these games. So I was really, really psyched to talk about the cast. But more than anything, I didn't even get the chance to tell you this because we just started talking a few minutes before the podcast today. But you know, we saw season two, and we're going to talk about season two in a little bit. But Audrey Middleton actually gave me a preview of the first episode of season three. And as good as season two was in terms of production value and art direction and cast, I feel like that she has absolutely outdone herself with what I see for season three. It looks so professional. And you have to consider that everybody who's on this crew, they're all volunteers, Taryn. They're all people who like played season one or season two, or, you know, are friends with Audrey. They all are volunteers who are doing the camera work behind the scenes. Audrey has really put every ounce of energy that she has into the show, and I am excited to talk about it. So let's talk.
Yes. So really the format, I think, as well adds to it gives a platform for the great cast to really show off what they're made of. It's a very fast paced game. As you said, it takes place over the course of around 5 days.
Yep.
And so there are 20 people to be eliminated within 5 days. You still get the feel of like, hey, they're all living together over the course of essentially a week. But it is so fast paced. There's not a lot of downtime for them to just like
no
be
downtime.
Hanging out,
yeah.
Doing whatever. Like, they have to be gaming 24/7, and that really opens things up for a lot of like big plays, lying to people, backstabbing them immediately. Lots of drama comes from it all the time, and so there's a lot to be there's a lot of game to be played, drama to be had, and then the casting adds to that element perfectly. But I think we should probably describe how the game works, because it's like Big Brother, it's like Survivor, in the sense that there are people, they vote each other out. But of course, there are quirks to the game. It can be there are a lot of twists and turns to the game, and I am you know, very famously anti-twist. However, I do think that you know, when I say I'm anti-twist, it's usually anti-Big Brother twists, because
Big Brother twists, yes. They
do them poorly. The twists in Sequester are not done as poorly, in my opinion. I do think they add to gameplay and they add to drama, and the fact that it's so fast-paced means that there's not a whole lot of time for anybody to be, you know, you shake the cage, they get scared. No, they're going to be playing hard all the time. So
right.
The twists, while sometimes like might screw somebody over here or there, that's the game, and it doesn't hinder the gameplay. It doesn't hinder the entertainment value. And that's the most important thing.
Yeah. And you know, it's coming every cycle of the game. There is a twist in play. And I don't even really like calling it twists, because when I say twist, people think about Big Brother. It's just that the structure of the game changes from cycle to cycle. And so, you know, ahead of time, okay, I know that like this isn't going to be like Survivor or Big Brother where you just get to straightforward vote somebody out. There's going to be some wrinkle to the game that you have to use your strategy and your social game to overcome. The main thing to understand about Sequester is that every cycle of the game, two people are eliminated, one by a vote and one by a battle match. Obviously, someone is eliminated by a vote, and that's easy enough for people to understand. However, the person who's voted out in the early going of the game, the pre-jury, the first 10 people who are voted off are the pre-jury. That person has the ability to inflict karma on any two people that they want, basically two people they don't like, two people they think voted for them, two people who pissed them off, and drag them into a battle match. And the winner of the battle match gets to stay in the game The loser of the battle match leaves with the person voted out. So you're losing two people per cycle of the game, and that leads to a lot of really fun gameplay.
Yeah, I think if I had to compare it to another show, another game that you might be familiar with, it's probably closest to The Genius. If you've seen that, the South Korean show, one of my favorites of all time.
Very
highly praised in this community. It's probably most similar to that format. Each time they're doing an elimination cycle, there's some kind of thing to wrap your head around. Most of the time, it's not just a straightforward vote. And those things are interesting quirks that can be seen as sort of like genius challenges. And you know, basically the winner of those things, sometimes there's an actual challenge, sometimes it's just a quirk of the vote, sometimes it's whatever. But the winners are often sometimes, you know, safe from the vote, but maybe not safe from being chosen for a battle match.
Right.
And then, you know, so really there's a lot of things to pay attention to as a player. You want to, you know, be able to be safe from a vote. You also want to be safe from being chosen to be in a battle match. You need to be able to win battle matches. Battle matches themselves and the challenges themselves, we talked a lot this season on Big Brother about how the challenges are beginning to be a bit broken. A lot of them are very, very physical. Very much not the case in Sequester. Anybody can win any of the challenges. They are usually not even very crapshooty. A lot of them are very skill-based puzzles. Some of them are like a little bit like this person just got a little bit lucky, but that's, you know, I enjoy those.
Gender neutral. I've been talking to Audrey Middleton, and that is the number one thing that she is a big proponent of, is making sure that the challenges are as gender neutral as possible, and not, and it works both ways. There are challenges that really favor women in some aspects, and she really does try to make sure that every challenge that comes down the line is as neutral as possible when it comes to gender. A couple of things we should talk about: there are some Survivor esque things that are in the game. There are Big Brother things that are in the game. There are Big Brother Survivor aspects of Survivor that are in the game. The number one thing to know about when it comes to Survivor is obviously majority rules most of the time. That's going to carry the day. But if there is a tie, then they get a revote, just like they do on Survivor. And if they cannot break the tie, then all of the people who were not original victims of the tie go on to a wheel of misfortune, and somebody at random is sent home. Much like Survivor, it's the equivalent of drawing rocks, really, where, you know, someone's going to go home at random, and the two people who are tied, or three people who are tied, however many people who are tied, they get to be safe, because by definition, you couldn't make your own decision. And so now you have to pay for it by playing a game of chance. So I like that very much.
Yes. The other Survivor-esque aspect is that there are the equivalent of immunity idols.
Yes.
Hidden around the house. I don't know exactly what the logic is for how many are hidden at a time. It seemed like it was like two per elimination cycle.
I don't know that either. That's the one thing I probably should ask Audrey about that. I think that it's basically one per cycle, but if they're not found, then like, let's say one is not found during the second episode, they're not going to move it, and they are still going to hide a third one during the third episode. So that's why, like, for instance, during season two, I think there was one episode where two LOSs were found. That's what they call the idols on Sequester. That's an acronym for locus of safety, which I feel like is a really wordy word. Basically, it's an idol. That's what you need to know. So whenever you see somebody searching for an LOS or talking about an LOS or whether or not they're going to play their LOS, they're talking about an idol. It's a protection. It's something that can protect you from the vote or protect you from the battle match, much like Survivor. As far as the vote goes, you have to play it before the votes are read. So you can't wait to see if you're voted out in order to play your LOS. You have to play it before the votes are read. But as far as battle matches go, you have a little bit more freedom. You can play it basically after you've been selected for a battle match. And so you have a little bit more leeway there. But those are the two things that are more related to Survivor more than anything. And I think they work really, really well on this show.
Yes. And so that's generally how it goes for the first half of the season. And then in the second half of the season, things change up a bit when there's 10 players left. That's when the jury starts. And that's when one player begins to be eliminated each round. And that's just the person that is voted out. Then that person gets to choose one person to battle match with, and the loser of the battle match ends up being eliminated. So you can theoretically just win battle match after battle match, even though you keep getting voted out until you get to the end. But again, these are not like the most, like, there's not one person that's going to win every single battle match unless you're some kind of puzzle god. Not likely that that's going to happen, but it is a possibility. You are no longer able to just be straight up voted out.
Exactly. The other thing to keep in mind is that, and this is pre-announced going in, all of the contestants know this going in. Remember, like I said, everybody pays their own way to come to Sequester, and they don't want to, like, I don't know if I'd really want to, I guess I probably would because I'm a nutcase, but I don't know if I really want to go to a place where I knew I could literally be voted out on the first day and literally have nothing else to do. So there is one pre-announced buyback challenge, one opportunity to get back in the game once the first 10 people are eliminated. This is not a surprise. Everybody knows it's coming. After the first 10 people are eliminated, Sequesterbot, which is the ominous sort of being that hosts the game, will give all of the victims of the first 10 eliminations one final chance to get back into the game. And from the 11... from the final 11 on, they have made the jury. So the stakes do go up because after that point, as you talked about, they get a chance to battle against somebody else to stay in the game. But the one wrinkle of that is that before, votes were cast anonymously. But after the jury starts, votes are revealed if you are part of the contingent that voted the person out. So let's say me and you are competing against each other, Taryn. You vote me out. I'm the person who gets voted out. After I'm voted out, all of the people who voted for me are revealed to me, and I get to pick from amongst those people to battle against. So there's a really fun twist to the game where if you were not amongst the people that voted me out, then I can't pick you for the battle match. So there is some incentive for some people to say, to at least be tempted to not want to go with the majority, knowing that that would keep them safe. But on the other hand, everyone's going to see that when you eventually have to reveal yourself. So if you didn't like take your medicine too with the rest of everybody else, then obviously your allies are going to be very put out with you, and you might be a target for the remainder of the game.
Yes. So that, and that's just one of many wrinkles in the strategy of the show. Watching season two for me was interesting as somebody that cares about strategy and that, you know, wants to find like what is the optimal way to go about this. It was very interesting to watch because it was very difficult to determine like what is the best long-term strategy for this game, because there were a lot of players that were doing a lot of great things for one elimination cycle, but there's a bunch of elimination cycles, and so that kind of exposes them, and that's that puts them at a disadvantage moving forward, like, you know, switching your vote at the last minute so you're immune that round. Well, now everybody knows that you're a snake and they're not going to trust you, and they're probably going to vote you out the next time. There, it's very, very interesting from a strategic standpoint, and it also, as I mentioned before, does not lack in drama. If you decide to watch season two, you'll see that right away.
Yes, you will. I will say that I asked that question because when I was going down to interview these people, you and I had talked about this, and I said, is there anything that you really want me to ask these people? And the number one question that you had was you wanted to know, especially from the hardcore gamers, the people, even some people who may have played the online version of Sequester, is there an optimal way, in your opinion, to play Sequester, and how would you go about doing that? And I got a lot of really interesting answers when I asked that question, and I even made sure that I told them that, sorry, my computer just went to a screensaver there really quick. This is a new computer, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know what I'm doing with it. But I asked them that question. I was really excited to hear their answer, and I think you will too. By the way, those interviews will be live on the Wrap-Ups YouTube channel over the weekend. I can't give you an exact time on that, but I was really excited. I had a suit and everything, Taryn. I look fabulous. I'm so excited to show people. Like, you got to go out for the Big Brother finale, and that was really cool. but I got to go down and interview these people before the game started for Sequester, and I am so excited about it. By the way, the other thing that you guys should know, we were talking about these people and how they get eliminated and what they're, you know, trying to do. They're trying to make the jury, obviously, and make their way to the final two. It's just like Big Brother, where there's a final two. But what are they playing for? Are they just playing for a title? No, they're actually playing for real money. Now, it's not $500,000. Obviously, you know, if people are paying their own way to come down there, that it's not a huge chunk of money. They're playing for $2,500 and the title of winner of Sequester. But I have to tell you, for my money, I was getting more drama and more strategy out of this show than I did last season of Big Brother. So I will take Sequester over Big Brother, at least as it currently stands, any day of the week and twice on Tuesday.
Yeah, I don't think any of these people are playing for the money. They're playing for the title that they want to win, and that's why they're there. Yep. And you know, they're plenty willing to backstab whoever in order to win, because they've all got massive egos. It's wonderful.
Exactly. They have got massive egos. They all think they're the best gamers in town, and it's so fun to watch them fall on their face, especially when they really make a mistake. And there were plenty of people that made their own mistakes during season two. Obviously, season two is the season that really got me into this show. And obviously, we have season three coming up. Let's talk about season two and some of the highlights of it, Taryn, because I really feel like that for people who are fans of Big Brother, season two, for me, at least the pre-jury, begins and ends with one person, and his name is Judd. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, Big Brother 15, Judd Daughtry, who was famously blindsided in the first double eviction of Big Brother 15 out of nowhere. That was, still to this day, that is the most amazing double eviction I have ever seen when I've been watching television. I'm just like, what the hell? How did that happen? I still don't understand how he totally got voted off, but he was here. He was part of the cast. There were a couple of other reality stars who played season two of Sequester, a couple people from Big Brother Canada, one girl from The Amazing Race, and Judd, who played Big Brother 15. And he absolutely ran roughshod over the first half of this game.
Let's say if you want to watch season two, now is the time to press pause on the podcast, go check it out. We're going to talk about season two a bit for those that have watched it, or if you don't plan on watching it but want to start with season three of Sequester, that is going to be starting on November 3rd, I believe.
Yep, November 3rd, Sunday at 8 p.m.
Yeah, so watch out.
I'm sorry, on YouTube and Amazon Prime.
Amazon Prime. Yep. So watch out for that. Watch out for the interviews that Brent did. We will have coverage of that, and then we'll start covering the show after it airs. So I'm sure you can pay attention to all of that. If you don't want to watch season two and you just want to start with season three, then feel free to listen to us as we describe our thoughts about season two. And we will, of course, be spoiling it to some degree here. So there's your warning.
You've been warned. Yeah, warned. Exactly. Well, I mean, here's the thing. Judd, I didn't get to see a lot of him on Big Brother 15. And so it was really interesting having him back. And I was like, oh, he's nice. He's fun. But he's got that accent. He's sort of typically stereotyped into the dumb role, like, somebody who talks like that and acts like that and smokes like that. You're not going to put a lot of stock into. But honey, let me tell you, even though he did not win Sequester season two, he won it in my heart, because mm-hmm. he absolutely played he was like the definition of a big game player, because for the first episode of the game, he's not doing a whole lot. And the reason he's not doing a whole lot is because he's found an LOS, which is, as I said, is like the Sequester version of Survivor's Idol. So he knows he's safe and he just has to figure out if he's in danger or not. Well, there was this one girl who basically got in his face and said, I don't like you. Nobody's really bonded with you. You don't look like you're doing much and you're probably going home. And he didn't like that at all. He eventually played his LOS to save himself during the first episode. And by the second episode, he is totally calling her out. He's calling her out in front of people. He's saying, you're my target. He's coming for her head. And amazingly, through the machinations of the second episode, he is able to get his way and get her out. There was this amazing twist to the game. It was called the vote bomb. And all of the contestants had the opportunity to press the red button or the green button. If you press the green button, everything stays normal. Majority will rule and that person will be voted out. However, if even one person, Taryn, pressed the red button, the game is going to be flipped on its head, and all of a sudden, the person with the least number of votes is going to be voted out. And this was really, really fun.
Yeah, it was. And let me say that Judd is a person on Big Brother. He was my favorite player on Big Brother 15.
Really?
For like the first half of the game.
Okay.
until Andy got him out, and I was like, okay, never mind. Andy's my favorite player. Because wow, that was good. But I loved Judd because I felt like he had a lot of potential in the game. I felt like he was doing well, and that he had unlocked potential that he could really showcase if he had the chance. Andy saw that too and cut him at the knees. And I feel like Sequester unlocked that potential in Judd. And I feel like the format is strong enough that it does that for everybody that we see. Jesse from Big Brother Canada, I'm sure we'll talk about him, was another player that we felt had potential, was cut down at the knees, unlocked his potential.
It really did. Like,
it really does. Like, this is a format that really shows, is capable of showcasing the true potential of people that we've seen before who didn't seem like they were huge gamers. And now all of a sudden, Judd is like this huge gamer who is like going left and right, doing massive, crazy things like this week that you're talking about, where he hits that button and he totally lies about it.
Like, everyone's like, because remember, if one person hits the button, the game's going to be flipped on its head. So of course he goes back into the room. He hits the red button, but nobody knows he did. Everyone else hit the green button, and so he walks back into the room, and he is like, and the funny part is the girl that he called out, Hannah. She's saying, look, I'm going to hit the red button if you guys don't vote out Judd, because obviously he's coming for me. So he totally takes advantage of this, that she's basically saying this. So when people find out that the red button has been pushed, they're like looking at her half as much as they're looking at him, because she just said, well, I'm going to press the red button, even though after the fact she's saying, no, I didn't press the red button. So now they're in this really weird circumstance where the person with the least number of votes is going to get voted out. Now, to understand, again, it's the person with the least number of votes. So if you don't have any votes, you're not in danger. So zero mm-hmm. votes is okay. And the most votes is okay. Even more votes than anybody else is okay. But if you have the least number of votes, of actual votes, you are going to be sent home. So obviously, there's a lot of danger here for a stray vote to hit somebody, and then you're in trouble here. And we end up in the end with a really weird circumstance where there's like a 10-way tie between a bunch of people that got one vote. And it was so hilarious watching them get there, because there was this one guy who was like, his name was Dan. He was like, I'll take all the votes for everybody. And he was like trying to like make himself out to be like a big hero. Like, it's okay to vote for me. You guys can vote for me. And people were like in confessional going like, this guy thinks he's some hero, but he's actually like totally like self-serving. Like, we totally see it. And the funny part was, in the end, he actually was the only person who voted for himself. Unlike Big Brother or Survivor, you can actually vote for yourself in Sequester, and there are times when strategically you probably should, but in this instance he was trying to get like 10 people to vote for him, and I think all 10 people said, yeah, Dan, we'll vote for you. But then in the end, none of them voted for him. He voted for himself and got himself part of this 10-way tie and was actually in danger of going home if not for the grace of Judd here, Taryn.
Yeah, very, very much so. I believe how they decided to break the tie was that the people who were not involved in the tie had to, they had a time limit too, right?
I don't think they had a time limit, but they basically
they had to like quickly decide.
Yeah, they had to quickly decide. The people who were not involved in the tie, which was basically like eight other people at this point, because remember, two people have been eliminated already. There's 10 people tied, and so there's eight people who are not part of the tie. Those eight people, including Judd amazingly didn't get a vote from anybody. They're all part of this little group, and they try to huddle up. And Judd, oh, by the way, the one thing I forgot to add was, like, previous to this twist, like, unleashing itself, Judd had gone to Hannah and had, like, a reconciliation, which was his way of saying it, where he pretended to like her and was like, oh, I like you. It's just game. Don't worry. Like, we're good. But then, like, in front of everybody, they're like, do you want to get rid of Hannah? And he's like, no. Like, she's a ding-a-ling. Like, we should totally keep Hannah. And again, during this revote, the same rules apply where the person with the least number of votes is going to get voted out. So they quickly figure out, all eight of them, that if we all vote for the same person, then if all eight of us vote for the same person, then that by definition will be the least number of votes and that person will go home. So they're all asking themselves who we should get out. Judd says, let's get rid of Dan, the guy I mentioned before who tried to get all the votes on him because he's a strategic threat and we should get rid of him. So they all agree with Judd, okay? And then they all go to break the tie. All seven of them who listened to Judd all voted for Dan. It's at this moment Judd makes his move and he decides to vote for Hannah. And by a vote of 1-7, Hannah, you are out of the game. And it was glorious to watch, Taryn. I was absolutely like, I didn't even like Judd his first time around on Big Brother, but I was living for him here.
Yeah. And this was just like, this was episode after episode that he was just playing. Like his life was on the line every week. And he was just, because like, this is the kind of move that I talked about. Like you make this kind of move and like, people were like, okay, well, Judd totally screwed us over, right? Yes. Like they knew it was Judd.
Well, that's the thing. There's some people are like, could he have done that? Because he's not mm-hmm. that smart. Like they're totally, it's like the JT effect from Survivor where they're blinded by the fact that he sounds dumb. So he couldn't have been smart enough to pull this off where he was telling us to vote for Dan and then secretly voted for Hannah. Like he didn't do that really, because if he did, he's a genius. And I'm like, oh my God, he totally did that. And they were just like totally bamboozled by it. And it was great to watch. So I love that. Yeah. And, episode two was my favorite.
He really took advantage of like the, like just like playing up, like continuing to get into arguments with people. Like he was a big target and he knew it and he played that up and he used it to his advantage. He amazingly made it like the whole first half of the game.
Yep.
Before it finally caught up to him. But yeah, he was fantastic to watch.
He was so close to making the jury and I was so bummed when he ultimately didn't. But he did get a chance to get himself back into the game. I want to talk about the buyback challenge, because mm-hmm. everybody had a chance. The first 10 people who were eliminated, Sequesterbot gave all the first 10 people who were voted out, Taryn, or eliminated, to have one final chance to get back into the game. And they did it in the style of a particular movie that I know you have watched before. You want to talk about it?
I love this movie. This called was great. Circle. And the premise of Circle is that people just wake up and they're all just standing in a big circle and they have to vote each other out one by one until there's one person left and they all have to create a majority vote for each cycle of how it works. And so that's basically the premise of the buyback. All of the pre-jurors stand in a circle and then they point at a person to vote out, and it keeps going one by one until there's just just three people left.
Yep.
At which point they essentially have to at which point the person that gets voted out in third place decides yes. who to take down with them, and then yes. the remaining person goes back into the game.
Such good television. That was so great. So they're literally like, they didn't know this was coming, and there's a point in time where the girl from The Amazing Race, Krista DeBono, who you might have seen on Twitter, she's done some good imitations of Christy and a few other house guests, she was trying to tell the other people in the pre-jury in the circle, like, you guys need to be aware that, like, Hamza, who from Big Brother, who is also on this season for Big Brother Canada, and a lot of the people who were voted out early, Hannah, DJ, all of these people who were voted out early, they probably have a stronger bond than the rest of us, and we should be aware of that. And she tried to tell people this, but no one really listened to her, and they eventually voted her out. And she was like walking out going, you freaking idiots. And of course, that's eventually what happened, where a lot of the people who were voted off early and had more time to bond with each other really took over control of the game here and made sure they made quick work of their enemies. Watching Hamza here, who, spoiler alert, is the person who ends up getting back into the game, was pretty phenomenal. He was basically directing who was getting voted off from round to round. And he was using Cindy, for also from Big Brother Canada, to pad his majority. And he was, because she was like standing right next to Hamza, and he was telling her what to do, and she was following his lead like lockstep. All of a sudden, Taryn, he decides to get rid of her, and she's like, he's doing it behind her back when she's not looking, and she looks over all of a sudden, and she's like, no, don't get rid of me. And he's like, and he looks at her and he goes, it's better for my game. So great. And then, like I said, at the final three, it was so great because Sequesterbot comes on the intercom and they tell them that in this final round, the person who's voted off at the final three will get to drag the other person of their choice with them back to the pre-jury, leaving one other person remaining who will then get back into the game. And the girl, again, it's this Hannah girl who I can't stand. She plays
She was the one person that I was talking about. And I was like somebody who's not as much of a player.
Yeah, she was, oh my God. Like, I told my friend Kim Atina, who won this season, I've been talking to her about season two, and I said, oh my gosh, she better be glad that I wasn't podcasting about season two when it was on, because I would have come for her left, right, and center. I've never seen somebody play so bad, so terribly, and then totally punish their allies. Just to go back really quickly, when she was voted off in the second episode because of Judd, who did she punish for the battle match? She didn't punish Judd. She punished her two allies, the two people who were like totally wedded to her and loved her. In Kilby and Kim, who, like, of course, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't watched the episode, you don't know who the hell I'm talking about. But she put them into a battle match just because she was like perturbed that they didn't, I don't know, save her or something. I couldn't even follow her logic on why she put them into the battle match. But whatever, I was totally through with her. It was so satisfying to see Hamza get rid of her at the final three. It was so dramatic too, because Hannah is pointing at Hamza, Hamza's pointing at Hannah, and they're trying to get this young boy, Colin, to point at either one of them, and Hamza's literally yelling at him, going, come on, Colin, let's vote her out! Who cares? Let's see what she does! Finally, Colin, like, points at Hannah, and she goes, well, I'm dragging you back with me then. And then Hamza comes back into the game. It was so freaking amazing. I was living for it.
It's very much a game that that rewards boldness, the circle game, because if you are hesitant at all, you become like, being the swing vote is not where you want to
not
be.
Not where you want to be
in that game.
No.
Because you are the person that will be punished for it.
Yes. And that's a great point. Yeah. Hamza quickly deciding, look, I'm voting for you, it puts the onus on other people to be the betrayer. Colin, in that instance, became the betrayer, and she punished him because he was the one who ultimately decided her fate. That's a great point, Taryn.
Yeah. So then we get to the second half of the game, where, I mean, really, I will say from the start, I noticed Cam right away as somebody that I felt
really
was like fairly consistently doing well. Obviously Jesse was kind of dominating the game for a while, and I felt like I knew the winner beforehand, so
right.
I knew Jesse didn't win. I knew there was some downfall coming his way, but I kept noticing Cam, and I was like, he must be the guy that like falls just short, because this guy's killing it.
You know who he reminded of? He reminded me of Ethan Zone from Survivor Africa, who always said, you know what, I don't want to be the coach, but I want to be like the assistant coach. Mm-hmm. I always felt like Cam was the guy who was like second or third in the guys' alliance. Like, he was working with Hamza, he was working with Jesse for a time, and he was never the leader, but he was always the tag along, and he was always positioned right behind them. And I thought really played a fun game and a pretty phenomenal game, until we get to the date night twist where Jesse just totally decides to blow up his game. This was my other favorite twist, and probably my favorite twist of the jury phase of the game, Taryn. Well, let's quickly talk about it. So there was a point in time where they unleashed the date night. They said, you know what? It's time for a little relaxation. Let's send everybody on a date. You're going to go on a date with everybody remaining in the game. There's only 8 people remaining in the game at this point. So they send everybody on a date. You're on a 5-minute date with them. But the one wrinkle to understand is once you go on a date with somebody, you can't go on a date with them again. So people that you talk to early on and make a plan with about who to vote out, the plan might change midstream, and then you don't have another chance to get back to them. Instead, you must rely on who you're going to go on a date with next or down the line to relay the plan back to the people who you've already had a chance to talk to. And this was where Jesse's game totally went haywire.
Yeah. First of all, this is not the time to make a move. it's not the right game format to make that move. But second, yeah, I mean, in Rollins, so that's probably the biggest part of this is that there's just. When you make your move, you want to have as much control over the situation as possible, over the flow of information as possible. And this is a version of voting people out where you have the least amount of control over the flow of information. You can say one thing to one person, but then they're going to individually talk to all of the other people after that. And as that information spreads, things are going to change and you're not even going to see it happening. So this for me was not the right time. But I do think he was correct in noticing that Cam was a threat to his game and that that he needed to make a move at some point. I think this was definitely too early in the wrong spot. Not only the wrong spot, but also too early in the game to make the move. Although at the time, I didn't realize that it ended at four, so maybe it wasn't too early because there were only a couple of eliminations left. But
well, there are eight people remaining in the game, and he still had, you know, at seven, at six, at five, and at four. And of course, four's a little funky. We can talk about that really quickly. But I feel like he had one or two more chances to get rid of Hamza. Mm-hmm. Obviously, for those of you who haven't watched the season, Jesse is in an alliance with Hamza, his buddy from Big Brother Canada, who actually got him voted out on Big Brother Canada. And he was working with Hamza for the longest time. Hamza came back into the game from the pre-jury. He was the one who won the buyback challenge. And so Jesse's working with him and Cam for a long time. But suddenly at the date night twist, Jesse decides to target Hamza out of nowhere. It seemed like it almost seemed like he was jealous of him, which I don't think was the case. Maybe he just realized his position within the game.
And I feel like what this was that he did not want to lose to Hamza. That they, with the first episode, they saw each other, they were like, we know we're going to snake each other at some point. And Jesse already was snaked by Hamza once. He did not want to lose to Hamza a second time. He wanted to be able to, even if it cost him the game, he wanted to make sure that he did not get, like, he could go to the finals with Hamza and that probably would have been better for both of their games. But if that meant that Hamza ended up snaking him first, that would have been the worst.
Yeah, that's probably a good point. And that's probably what happened here because Jesse was playing such a great game when he got to the final eight. He basically had control of a majority of the people. They were all loyal to him. And he was able to get Hamza out at the date night twist. I think he was at the date night or was the one right after that. He got Hamza out. He got Cam out of the game or at least got him voted off where he had to challenge somebody in a battle match. And it really led to some interesting television. There's an opportunity where our eventual winner in the game gets challenged by Hamza. He literally picks the oldest contestant in the game, and she calls him out for that and says, you know, hey, what are you doing picking the old lady in the game? He's like, look, I'm just trying to stay in the game here. So they have to go into a battle match. Of course, everybody's expecting for Hamza to win the battle match against Kim. She beats him and he is so mad. It's so glorious to watch, Taryn. I loved getting, I like more than anybody, Hamza, I feel like played just how he did on Big Brother Canada, which is like frenetic and a little crazy. And I felt like that he ultimately got his just desserts here by Kim beating him in the battle match.
Yes, and it really felt like he was going to win, because he was doing way better than Kim at the challenge.
Yes.
But he kept waiting. I don't even remember exactly. It was like he had to do something with like a spoon in his mouth or something. But he kept waiting until the end of his thing to do the hardest.
Yes.
Part of the thing.
Yes.
And then when you fail, you have to like start over.
Yeah. If you fail, you have to completely start the challenge again. That's a great point. So they were trying to like move these cotton balls with the spoon in your mouth and move them to the top of the ping pong or what do you call those? The red cups that everybody
solo
chooses.
Cups.
Solo cups. Yes. Thank you. And they had to move them to the top and he waited, until the end to do the hardest part, which is crazy considering that it's in the rules that if you lose a ball or a cotton tip, you you have to start over. So I don't know why he did that. But anyways, he got eliminated from the game. Kim survives and eventually is going to make her way to the final four, where they have this really interesting challenge. It's called Drag to Hell. And I know that I talked to you about this. This was probably my favorite part of the game because there were some people who really misplayed and there were some people who probably played really well here. For those of you who don't know, it was called Drag to Hell. The final four get together. They're around a dinner table. They haven't been able to talk ahead of this. They get, I think, 3 or 5 minutes to talk and decide amongst themselves who they're going to vote out. That's the challenge. But the wrinkle is that the person who is voted out at the final four gets to pick somebody else to drag with them to the jury, leaving us with the final two. And I really felt like this was so fun from a strategy perspective to watch people literally so close to the end. And then a couple people really stepped in it here, Taryn.
Yeah, I mean, this is essentially a single round of the circle game. Yes. That ends at four instead of three. And similarly, boldness matters. You need to be bold, and Cam was very bold, and he had the correct strategy as far as I'm concerned. And I was a big fan of CJ. I was hoping for her to do. I felt like this is where Cam loses, clearly. And that probably it's going to be Cam and Jake that go down, and it's going to be Kim versus CJ, and CJ loses to Kim or something like that, because I knew Kim won. But Cam played this right, and CJ completely screwed it up.
And brought up. See, go ahead. I know you're excited to talk about it. Go ahead.
Well, you need to be bold. You need to have a hard stance. If you don't have a hard stance, you are going to screw yourself. And she, I felt, was playing with her emotions and was thinking about, like, you know, what was what she wanted rather than what she needed. And really just got in her own way.
For those of you who didn't watch this, what happened was a few of them tried to make their intentions known, and they said, look, I'm going to vote the X person out, and if I get voted out, I'm taking X with me back to the jury. So you knew where some people stood. There was this guy named Jake who had survived many, many battle matches and was probably arguably, along with CJ, the fan favorite for people watching along at home. He was cute, young, he survived a bunch of battle matches, and of course you want to root for somebody like that because you see him getting voted off round after round, and
he's the underdog.
Yeah, you want to root for somebody like that. But they both really misplayed here. CJ more than Jake, but I do feel like both of them misplayed. CJ was asked by Jake, well, if you get voted out, who are you going to drag with you back to the jury? And she says, I'm not telling you. No! What are you doing? Like, that's your trump card. That's your ace in the hole. You have to tell him, look, if I get voted off here, I'm dragging your ass back to the jury with me, Jake. That's what you need to know, so that when the vote comes down, Jake votes with you, CJ, so that you both can at least have an opportunity to create a 2-2 tie here, Taryn. I was so aghast when this happened.
Yeah, because CJ was basically told, like, we need to vote together, and if we don't, I will drag you down.
Yep.
Which is the correct play.
Yes.
You have to have at least two, and then, you know, bluff your way, force the other two to break up. But she took it personally. She was like,
God, yes,
you would drag
did.
Me down? Like, how could you?
How could you? How dare you? And this is somebody, by the way, this is somebody who had never been voted out. CJ was never voted out. In fact, I don't even think had a vote against her, maybe once, but I don't think anybody ever voted for CJ. She didn't know what it was like to be targeted. She was thrown into a battle match early on, but she won that handily, and never, like, after that, she was never challenged again. So I think she really thought she had the game, like, totally in hand here, Taryn, and just totally stubbed her toe. And it was so sad to watch, because not only was she eliminated here when they all voted for her, but because she wouldn't tell them who she was going to drag with her to the jury, she picked Jake, leaving Cam and Kim in the final two. I couldn't believe it.
Yes. So that really surprised me, because again, I felt like Cam had played such a strong game. I figured he wouldn't make it to the end. It was a little bit like, like Ko Rong. So it's like Survivor Ko Rong. Yeah. When I was like, surely Audrey doesn't make it to the Aubrey doesn't make it to the end, because I know that I have a good feeling that Michelle's going to win. And then Aubrey did make it to the end. I was like, what?
What? How does this work? Happen? Yeah.
Wait, Aubrey loses a jury vote
to Michelle?
but that it was a very close vote. I believe it was one. It was just one vote. That
five
decided
to four. Yeah.
But it did. You know, what surprised me a little bit, or I guess it didn't surprise me, but it might sound surprising that the jury seems very, very emotional.
Bitter. And
you would think that
you would think.
It's 5 days. It's very small prize money. Like, they're all gamers. Surely they respect game. If anything, it seems the complete opposite. It seems as though, because it takes place over such a short period of time, like, they are still really in it and really emotional about the whole thing. And so they are, yes, very bitter.
They haven't had any time to process their own eliminations. I feel like that's part of it, too. You're right. Mm-hmm. They all feel like they're still in the game. These people were bitter as fuck. They were so mad that they weren't in the final two. They were like basically calling the final two undeserving. They were like, how are you there? You didn't deserve anything you didn't do anything to get there. And then when they had to vote, it wasn't a vote for them. It was like, well, I guess I have to pick between these two jokers. So
it really felt like most of the votes were against the person they didn't vote for, like, yes. on both ends.
On both ends, yes. On both ends. Yep.
It was bad. And I gotta say, I felt like Cam really did drop the ball a bit in his answers. They were certainly difficult questions to answer, but I did not feel like he did a great job. I think Kim didn't have the best answers either. However, she was able to maintain her composure, which I think was important. And Cam did not as much. It was very interesting, because it felt to me like Cam had been playing for so long over the course of 5 days, but it's like nonstop over the course of those 5 days, that he was just so mentally just exhausted, and people were berating him about it, and that he just it seemed like he just broke down at that point.
Yeah, I agree with your assessment that I feel like that Cameron dropped the ball. It's so close because their names are so close, Cam and Kim. Yeah. But Cam, again, when the jury was voting, somebody voted for Cam, but they said it like Kim, so I thought they voted for Kim. So it's Cameron and Kim in the final two, and I do agree with your assessment that Cameron dropped the ball in the final two. Kim, for her own benefit, she didn't do a great job, but she did a serviceable job, and considering that Cameron really dropped the ball, I feel like that ultimately was enough, and she got the victory. 5-4, Taryn. Just like any good reality show, 5-4. Very fun.
Yes. So definitely an interesting result. I'm very, very excited to get to the new season, to see how this plays out. Honestly, while I did love the contributions of Jesse and Hamza and Judd, I thought they were all fantastic. I'm excited to see a season where there are not pre-existing relationships.
Yep.
I believe
there are a couple pre-existing relationships from people that hate each other, but there's no there are no reality stars that are on this season. There are no people that they're bringing back from another show on this season. It's 20 people who have never been on television before, never played a reality game on television before. There are a couple people who have played what we would call an online reality game in Hunter and Ty. They know each other. Also, Brayden and Kristen have played Sequester before, or at least know of each other. I think maybe Kristen's sister, she has a twin sister, has played before. And I might be getting some of that wrong, but I know that they know each other because I saw a preview of the first episode, like I say, and I know that they recognize each other when they first see each other. So it's not like a big pre-existing relationship. It's not like they're friends or have hung out at all together. They've just played a little bit of online reality games before, and they might have an opinion about the people that they're playing with. So as I said, I talked with all 20 of these people. I had a blast of a time interviewing them. I felt like Rob Sesternino. I felt like Ika. I felt like Taryn Armstrong when I was down there. I had my own note cards and everything. I went all out, Taryn. I had such a great time. So I talked to about 20 of them. I think you're going to be very excited to hear what they have to say. We're going to do all 10 women first, and you're going to get to see those interviews up on the Rob's website. Rob has a podcast, YouTube channel, rather, or on the Reality TV Wrap-Ups channel it might be on. And look for those. So I think it's going to go up on Sunday and Monday, I'm pretty sure. And I think aside from that, have we decided what we're going to do with the interviews themselves? Are we going to do a podcast where we go through the contestants or not? I can't ultimately remember what we decided. I don't mean to put you on the spot, by the way.
We're gonna listen or watch through them.
Yes.
On the podcast, and I will react to them.
And I got shit to say. I got shit to say about some of these people. I kept on a happy face for some of these people that did an interview with me, but there were some people who I was like, oh God, you got no chance. So I've got opinions about these people, let me tell you.
And you are not spoiled or anything.
I am not spoiled. In fact, they have gone out of their way to make sure that I am not spoiled about anything. I don't know shit about shit, Taryn. I am so excited to experience this show with you. I am so psyched that the cast has kept a closed upper lip and they haven't said anything. And I am psyched to cover the, like, you can tell it in my voice. I am more excited to cover this show than I have anything in a long time. I'm just psyched about what Audrey Middleton is bringing to the screen, to reality television. Here's the thing. It's not been picked up by CBS or ABC or any, you know, Netflix or anything like that. But hopefully it may in the future. I think the show and the concept is strong enough, and her production values and what she values in a cast are strong enough that it may, but that doesn't matter. It's amazing television. When you watch this on your computer or your phone or wherever you end up watching this, you're not going to notice that it's some people in a backyard of a house that was rented where they are taping this. It's really amazing gameplay, and I am so psyched for everybody out there in Rob as a Podcast Land to experience this. If you are somebody who loves Big Brother, you are going to love Sequester, and I hope you experience it with me.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's what we have for you today. Again, make sure you stay tuned for the cast preview, interview, assessment, all of it at once. And the show itself will be starting in just about 2 weeks or so.
Just under 2 weeks from now. Yeah. November 3rd, Sunday at 8 p.m. on YouTube and Amazon Prime.
So there you go. Very exciting. I hope you enjoyed this. I hope we have convinced you that this is something you should check out if you haven't. I hope you enjoyed the late reactions to season 2 if you already have.
By the way, for those of you who have looked for it on YouTube, just you can go to my Twitter. I have it pinned at the top of my Twitter if you're looking for a link. You can also go onto YouTube and type in the search bar Sequester Access. Obviously, Sequester has some political connotations, and there's a bunch of political videos out there about the term sequester, but Sequester Access is what you have to search for to find it on YouTube, and I will do my best to get that out there.
I like just searching Sequester season 2 or Sequester season 3.
Sounds good to me.
Yep.
Sounds good to me too.
Yeah. All right. So thank you so much. You can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taryn, Instagram Taryn_Armstrong, Twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. You can find Brent at One Lucky Gay. That's where you'll find the pinned link for the show. And anything else?
That's it. Thank you so much joining me, Taryn.
Yes. Thank you guys for joining us. And we'll see you soon.